Talo Falava, you're with Dateline from RNZ Pacific, Lo'o Ingoa or Johnny Blades. Coming up.
I'm happy our discussions today will lead towards some of these fundamental tenets of self-determination.
Bougainville and Papua New Guinea leaders prepare for a key meeting.
At no point in time, a child should be hit.
Staff suspended at a prominent Fiji school amid claims of child abuse. And we speak to the Christchurch-based woman appointed to head a major Pacific regional fisheries block. Despite Papua New Guinea's ongoing national political crisis, this Friday the leaders of PNG and the autonomous region of Bougainville are due to meet for the second time this month. The meeting is the crucial Joint Supervisory Body, or JSB, where both governments look to find terms of agreement on how they will interact in the coming months, particularly where it concerns negotiations on Bougainville's desire for independence. This is the first JSB with the new president of Bougainville at the helm. Ishmael Todawama is looking for change, as Don Wiseman reports.
First and foremost, Mr. Todawama is pleased the meeting's actually going ahead, given the political tensions that have dominated Port Moresby for the last 10 days. Last week, he had called on PNG politicians not to let their infighting disrupt what is a vital event, and Prime Minister James Morape agrees. Mr. Morape did move the meeting back to Port Moresby rather than hold it as scheduled in Kokopo, presumably so he can stay in town with the rest of his now smaller team of MPs. He says he's remained strongly committed to finding a political solution to the Bougainville issue since he came to power 18 months ago. This is a comment at a press conference with Mr. Todawama earlier this month, ahead of a meeting that was setting up this JSB get-together.
My commitment and my generation of leaders in the greater PNG stand right behind to ensure your fullest version of self-determination is reached and associated with economic empowerment, or economic independence, as we say. And I am happy our discussions today will lead towards some of these fundamental tenets of self-determination, and to ensure that you are governing and looking after our people in Bougainville to the best as you can. And we are here to empower you and support you to the best as we can as we progress towards the final stages of what was detailed in the 2001 peace agreement.
For Mr. Todawama, he wants action at this JSB. He's talked since his inauguration, just over 2 months ago, about the need to get things moving both economically and politically. He says Bougainville's been operating as an autonomous region for 15 years and it's time to step things up. The president wants to see clear progress made on establishing a process to negotiate the outcome of last November's referendum on independence, which returned astonishing figures of 98% in favour of breaking away from PNG. But he says in its preliminary agenda, Port Moresby's approach was too vague.
It's an overdue agenda. We have passed that, and I would like to see if we could sort that out. It will take a while, but we must sort it out. At the same time, going into the consultation process.
Mr. Todawama also wants significant progress on the devolving of authority to Bougainville by Port Moresby. He wants to see clear commitments at this JSB so that Bougainville can take control of its policing, its ability to handle its own financing and taxation, along with control over fisheries and forestry policy.
We need economic power, you know, fisheries, forestry and others, and taxation, which will be a bit harder, but at least because it's spent in a bombing peace agreement. And police powers. We really want to get those economic powers because we need to be economically getting on our toes.
He accepts that in many respects, Bougainville lacks the infrastructure.
We must take the first steps in order to get the other steps going. That is the message.
Mr. Todawama's biggest focus is on creating a viable economy. He stressed this through the first part of his first 100 days and has already announced schemes involving the resurrection of limestone mining, a major forestry project and a special trading zone offering tax incentives to foreign investors. But the president says none of this will come to fruition until law and order reigns in Bougainville. And for that to happen, the government wants control over the police to rest in Booker, not Port Moresby. If Port Moresby agrees to the drawing down of these various powers, it will require significant funding support from the national government that no doubt will be a sticking point at these JSB talks. Good on Wiseman Tene.
Figures from Fiji indicate continuing alarming levels of abuse and neglect of children. Latest government figures reveal there were 870 cases of child abuse and neglect recorded between January and July this year. According to the Ministry for Children, about 500 girls have been subjected to neglect, physical and sexual abuse, and teenage pregnancy was also an issue. The alarming statistics were revealed at the recent launch of interagency guidelines for how to counter child abuse and neglect in Fiji. But as Christine Ravoy reports, the alleged child abuse at a prominent school last week has brought the issue to the fore again and left many shocked and angry.
The Education Ministry has suspended four people amid police investigations over last week's alleged abuse at the government school. The ministry said one of the staff suspended was the acting head of the school. Police said they received the complaints where four students claimed they were physically abused by a teacher at the school. Education Minister Rosie Akbar said the complaints included inflicting harm and subjecting the students to inhumane and degrading treatment. Ms. Akbar says there is zero tolerance for any breach of the ministry's code of conduct.
Some very important policies that we have, and because you're talking about values education, the behavior management policies that we have, the child protection policies that we have, child welfare act that we have. The procedure is when we receive a complaint, we investigate, right? If there's assault, if there's physical abuse, etc., then of course everybody must know.
World Children's Day was celebrated in Fiji last weekend. Addressing school heads, Ms. Akbar said staff were responsible for the children's safety and well-being.
The head of school, it is your duty to report this, not to us. Your policy clearly states what can be directly reported to the police. Don't say, oh, I reported to the ministry and the ministry did not report to the police. You are responsible. The head of school is responsible for managing the affairs of his or her own institution.
The minister said if found to have breached the ministry's policy, staff would be disciplined. Save the Children Fiji director Sharana Ali says she was deeply disturbed by the reports of alleged child abuse in schools.
If you look at the increasing cases, and in any case for that matter involving a child, it shouldn't be happening in the first place. And so it's quite concerning, and I think at the root cause is really about people's moral values. And people's lack of respect for children's rights.
Ms. Ali says Save the Children is working with other stakeholders to address the issue.
At no point in time a child should be hit. There shouldn't be any issues where a child is physically abused or abused emotionally or mentally. There shouldn't be any instance of that, because teachers are now being trained to discipline children using alternative means, be in a position where they can talk to the children in a positive way.
According to the Ministry for Children, a total of 1,452 cases of child abuse and neglect were reported last year. Minister for Children Miriseni Vuniwanga says the statistics are telling.
We need to revamp the way that we protect and care for our children. It tells us that we need to be more innovative in the way that we deal with child abuse and neglect. It also tells us that we are continuing to fail as parents, as caregivers, or as persons and organizations who have been entrusted with the safety and well-being of our children.
Meanwhile, the Fiji Human Rights and Anti-Discrimination Commission has launched its own investigation into the alleged abuse at the prominent school. The students' parents also lodged the complaints, with the commission claiming their children were stripped naked before having chilies rubbed on their mouths and private parts for leaving the school premises without permission. The parents claimed the punishment was ordered by the assistant head of the school, who has been suspended. School officials have not responded to a request for comment, referring all queries to the Education Ministry. Nayadangu, Christine Ravoy.
Christchurch-based Dr. Sangalofa Clark is readying to move to Majuro in the Marshall Islands to head up the parties to the Nauru Agreement. The PNA manages a significant portion of the Pacific's tuna stocks within the EEZs of its nine member nations. Dr. Clark, who has been at the PNA since it started in 2010, was named last week to take over from Ludwig Kumoro as chief executive. She's considered the architect of the Vessel Day scheme, which has proven lucrative for the Pacific Island member nations of the PNA, with their income from fishing licenses soaring around 800% as a result. She spoke with Don Wiseman, who began by asking how it felt to take on this new regional role.
It's a great honor and a privilege for me. The role of the CEO is to run the P&A office, and the core business of the office is the administration of the Vessel Day scheme, but it also provides support to the parties so they achieve their objectives.
This Vessel Day scheme, this to a large extent has been your baby, hasn't it?
Well, yes. My current role as policy manager, I've actually worked for the P&A office for 10 years. When the office first opened in Majuro, and I was recruited as a consultant specifically to work on the Vessel Day scheme. So those early years, I was involved in sorting out the rules and the methods for implementation of the scheme. So it included analytical work to interpret the rules and to show how the VDS was doing in the member country zones. It was obvious for the scheme to succeed, I guess, with the countries involved, need to have a very clear understanding of how it works and how they can best benefit from it.
I guess the thing with the VDS is in a very short period of time, it means countries in the Pacific are now really starting to earn very significant amounts of money where before they were getting next to nothing, and that's down to the VDS, isn't it?
Yes, that's one of the successes of the VDS. Parties are able to use it, you know, to collaborate and cooperate to get the maximum benefit from it. And so in that sense, it's really served its purpose well. I guess the main success of the VDS is that it's a dynamic tool. So it's been able to evolve and adapt over the years to fit in with aspirations and the situations of its member countries. So they've been very much involved in its design, and they've been able to extract, I think, a fair share of the value of their resources.
Do you think your involvement with the VDS is the reason you've got your new job as chief executive?
I guess that's one of the reasons, because I've been working with these countries for a long time now, and we've kind of reached our understanding. I think the other candidates were very good candidates as well, I must say, but I guess people know I work hard and I will do my best for them. So I think in that sense, we have an understanding there. I think I've earned some trust.
Now, in your position over the last few years, you've been basing yourself in Christchurch, but will you now have to base yourself in Majuro?
Yeah, that's right. And that was one of the things that I had to consider quite carefully. You know, I had to make a commitment, and I was very committed to do the work. I thought I could do a good job, and I'm very committed. And so part of that will be moving to Majuro, and I'm really looking forward to moving back.
You told us a short time ago about the nature of the work, but is that going to change, do you think? Can you see yourself taking the organization in a different direction?
I don't think the role will change. You know, the objective of the office is to support its parties to achieve the maximum benefit from their tuna resources, which we are doing through the VDS. And so we will continue to improve and implement the VDS. But the nature of the issues would change, I think, especially in these times with this COVID pandemic. Although we've seen the demand for tuna for canning remains high because people tend to buy canned tuna during crisis. So it's creating some short-term opportunities. And on the other hand, demand for high-value tuna for things like sashimi, those have been really hit because they're dependent on restaurants and air freight. But for P&A, I think we see continuing opportunities to increase the benefit from the tuna because the stocks from this region are also very healthy and well-managed. So that is in the short term. But further ahead in the long term, as you know, there's climate change. This is a major challenge because it seems likely to reduce the overall biomass or the population of tuna in P&A water system and also change the distribution. So this will need some changes in the current measures and the management measures that we have. But in the meantime, there's still opportunities for the P&A member countries. They can still improve on catching more of their own fish and replacing foreign vessels with their own, maybe processing their own fish. So even if the volume or there are changes and the fish goes down, there's still opportunity, I think, for P&A to increase their benefits from their resources.
That's Dr. Sangaalofa Clark, the new chief executive of the Parties to the Nauru Agreement Fisheries Block. That is Dateline for another episode. Thanks for joining us. There's more on our website, rnzi.com. Till next time, tōwhā.